People need to see results in their everyday lives, or they will lose faith in their governments and institutions, and they will lose hope in the future.
I rise today to call on the Speaker of the House to end proxy voting once and for all. Just this Sunday, President Joe Biden took to primetime television to declare the COVID-19 pandemic over. Thank God. In any other job in America, if you don't show up, you get fired.
My rule of thumb on budget and economy is just really study what Biden's doing and then do the opposite.
Are you ready?
Oh, I'm ready. I'm ready. I know you're ready. 704-570-1110. News Talk 1110. 993 WBT. Brent Winterble Show. It's a big, big time here in Charlotte. We are getting back to normal, obviously, as a result of the end of the pandemic that you heard from the President of the United States on 60 Minutes. And our own Breaking Brett Jensen is out in over at Quail Hollow. He's been walking the property, talking to folks, getting a sense of the great tournament coming up. And he joins us now online. Brett Jensen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
So talk a little bit about what you have been up to this late morning, early afternoon there at Quail Hollow.
Yeah, so as soon as I was finished with Bo and Beth and left WBT this morning, went straight basically to Quail Hollow and made the extreme rookie mistake when going to a golf tournament of not wearing shorts. It is hot outside.
Oh, gosh. And,
like, it is a rookie mistake, because if you look there, every female that's there working media, they're all wearing shorts or like golf skirts or something like that, or skorts. And then every guy is wearing shorts, and I showed up wearing slacks, and just, it was not good. But anyways, I digress. It's nice. Look, Brett, here's the thing. To put things in perspective, if you were to go to the Wells Fargo tournament on a Tuesday, right, just when they're doing a couple of practice rounds and stuff like that, yeah, it's nice. I mean, there are people there, but nowhere near the amount of people that were there today for the practice rounds with these two teams, the international team and mm-hmm. Team USA. Mm-hmm. And especially in the mornings when they were doing all their stuff, it was packed. And this is on a Tuesday. And then tomorrow's another practice round day. Then everything really gets underway on Thursday. But it was, you can tell this is different. When you see the course, the grandstands, like the grandstand on number one is like a built like a horseshoe that goes, you know, 50, 75 yards on each side of the fairway on number one and wraps all the way around the back of the tee box like a big giant horseshoe with this huge, massive video board and just stands everywhere. Like, this is, you can tell, like, when you just walk in, this is a different animal.
It's going to be fascinating. Any indication that we are going to see at least one president, perhaps two, coming up into this tournament?
Well, you know, the rumor had been that there were going to be two presidents. Well, Biden has actually confirmed. Like, he accepted the invitation mm-hmm. a month or so ago. And when I spoke to officials at Quail Hollow, like the people at Quail Hollow who would know, like the actual people that would know, I said, what day is President Biden going to be there? Tuesday, Wednesday, the start of the tournament on Thursday? And 2 weeks ago, they said, we have no idea. No one has gotten in touch with us yet.
Yeah, I think he's scheduled to speak tomorrow at the United Nations, because, you know, he was over at the funeral yesterday, traveled back here. And so I think he's speaking at the UN. So maybe he would fly from the UN here it'd be Thursday. But it's always good to see the commander in chief attending an event in your town, I guess.
Well, and also, yeah, I was going to say, attending an event in your name, the President's Cup. I mean, that's
right.
Exactly. And so I believe like most of the other presidents have been there. I think all the other presidents have attended the President's Cup. And, you know, and so whether or not, you know, the second former president shows up this week is also to be seen. But no final word on that either. But, yeah, people are wondering. Like, there are a lot of people going, I don't know. Like, people truly don't know.
All right. So what have you got on tap for tonight on your amazing program, Breaking with Brett Jensen?
So there's a recent gas leak, or what is expected, or what is said to be a gas leak that happened up in Cornelius. It's going on right now in Cornelius.
Right.
Supposedly a 12-inch hole in one of the lines up there. And I just posted on my Twitter feed, if you go to Brett_Jensen, you'll see the only exclusive video of this. Looks like a geyser. Looks like Old Faithful. It is shooting 100 feet up in the air, and maybe more, and it's making a roaring noise like you would expect from a tornado.
Wow.
So if you go to Brett_Jensen, you can see the video that I just uploaded literally minutes ago. And so I'm going to try and get more information about that, and obviously do some of the interviews that I did out at the President's Cup today.
All right, great stuff. Breaking Brett Jensen, looking forward to listening to your program tonight starting at 7. Appreciate you being there, buddy.
Anytime, Brett. I appreciate it.
You got it. That's Breaking Brett Jensen. 704-570-1110 is our phone number to be a part of the conversation. We believe that, at least it's been reported out on a couple of news outlets, that there is an inbound flight to Delaware carrying migrants from Texas, supposedly, allegedly. Governor DeSantis and Governor Abbott have teamed up again, and a flight departed Austin, Texas, that was chartered and is making its way to Delaware. Georgetown, Delaware is supposedly where the flight is going to go, and there, it's taken a 100 migrants or so in that direction. Now, you all already know about the sheriff of Bexar County, that's San Antonio in Texas. And this individual is doing an investigation to find out about migrant smuggling and all this sort of stuff. And what's happening now is you're starting to see blue cities taking on red states. And San Antonio is a blue city. Austin's a blue city. Dallas is a blue city. Houston's a blue city. El Paso's a blue city in a red state. And so now they're going to parade out Sheriff Javier Salazar, who's a Democrat sheriff in San Antonio, and he's going to be leading the charge. I guess he's going to attempt to bring Ron DeSantis to justice. Here's the problem there, Sheriff. If it turns out any of these migrants have been smuggled into Florida and they transited from San Antonio, I think you can probably prepare to be ready to be deposed in a grand jury situation in the state of Florida and also in the state of Texas as well. So be careful. You did have 50 or so migrants lose their lives in the back of a tractor trailer in your beautiful city of San Antonio, air quotes. 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Pam Warner's got a look at the traffic. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. 704-570-1110. Lots of big stuff happening out there in this country. I think it's time we have a serious conversation about something very specific: the long-term direction of this country. We need to understand that there is a hard-fought battle underway. 49 days to Election Day. 49 days from today, it'll be Election Day. So 7 weeks, right? You know that is exactly 7 weeks from today. And the question that we all ought to be thinking about is, what do we want in terms of the direction of the country? But very, very specifically, how do you want this to unfold? We already see, not 24 hours removed from the funeral of Queen Elizabeth II over in the UK, the open discussion of the future of the monarchy, the future of England and its importance in the world, all those sort of things. You know, it's the old having the conversation about you right in front of you. Make no mistake, the elites in this country are having that same conversation about your role in the Constitutional Republic. And if you doubt me, just put on MSNBC. Don't put it on at night. Put it on in the morning when they bring their real elites on there, okay? Go watch Morning Schmo and see what they're talking about with your country. Put on CNN. Put on those channels. Put on CBS This Morning and ABC Good Morning America and the Today Show. And watch how they talk about you with the disrespect and the revilement that they hold towards you. And I think the question needs to become this: are we still a nation that has sovereignty, or are we going to bend our knee to foreign capitals, foreign interests that are going to determine our future? Which direction do you want to go? Do you want to have say over your borders? Do you want to have say over the wars that your government decides to get involved in? Do you want to have say when it comes to your currency, your taxes, all of that? Because I'm telling you right now, they are sizing you up like an innocent man, woman, or child getting off a bus in a big city bus terminal, walking out there onto the sidewalk. The Democratic Party and elements of the Republican Party as well are sitting there figuring out how they can take every last penny from you like a game of three-card Monty. That's what they're doing. The Chamber of Commerce types in Washington, D.C. that are desperate for an inflow of available employable migrants who will or will not become American citizens of their own volition, but hoping to receive amnesty. Those are the folks that are sizing things up. These are the questions that come to people's mind. What do you want your country to be? Do you want your country to be a place where you're afraid to go into the city to have a dinner with your loved ones? Where you're fearful of going into states or cities because of the reputation they carry? What do you want it to be? And then once you make that decision about what you want your country to be, you have to vote accordingly. It's important to understand that no politician is going to be perfect to the cause. No politician is going to be perfect for the possibility of what may come. But here's the thing. You vote, and then that is when you have to immediately begin to apply the pressure on these scoundrels who talked you into voting for them. It's not set it and forget it. It is vote and then stay on them like they are an absolute runaway dumpster fire. You know who your congressmen and women are. Be ready to write letters, send emails, and make phone calls. Make sure that you hold them to account for the things that they're promising you. They're attempting to separate you, not from your vote. They're not trying to just separate you from your vote. They're trying to separate you from your sovereignty. Your sovereignty. You have agency over yourself. You are in charge of the nation of you. You make your decisions, how you want to spend your money, the health care that you want, how you want your children educated. You make those decisions, and then you have to act accordingly to protect those interests. And if you are not able to protect your interests in that regard, then you need to find somebody else to run the show. It's not just about voting on Election Day. It's about putting the fear of God into these Democrats and Republicans on Election Day, letting them know that they're not just going to hear from you 2 years from now down the road. It's going to be an ongoing process. We're going to be very, very familiar with you. 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Jeff Akison's got the update. News Talk 1110-993 WBT, Brett Winterbull Show. So let me flesh this out for you in terms of why it is it's important to stay on top of your Congress people. Congress has members who are effectively still trading on inside information there in Washington, D.C. Republicans and Democrats alike. Members of Congress have access to information that ordinary Americans don't. They meet with chief executives, they read classified intelligence reports, and help set the rules by which the economy works. That level of knowledge can give them an advantage if they or their families want to invest in the stock market, and many of them do. Nearly one in five members of Congress from both parties have in recent years bought stocks that intersected with their congressional committee work. This according to the New York Times. Now, I am no fan of the New York Times, but the reality is the reality here, folks. They are advantaging themselves by getting this information and then turning it into a profit for them. You don't have this information. I don't have this information. So nearly one in five members of Congress from both parties have in recent years bought stocks that intersected with their congressional committee work. That's probably an underestimate because lawmakers' work extends beyond their committee duties. Among the conflicts that are uncovered so far, the wife of Representative Alan Lowenthal, a California Democrat, sold Boeing shares a day before the House committee that he sits on released a report exposing the company's mishandling of its 737 MAX jet, which have been involved in two deadly crashes. Representative John Rose, Republican of Tennessee, sold $100,000 to $250,000 in Wells Fargo stock a few months before a committee he is on released a report that was critical of the bank. Senator Tommy Tuberville, an Alabama Republican on the Armed Services Committee, he and his wife sold options tied to Microsoft less than 2 weeks before the company lost a $10 billion contract with the Defense Department. In many of these cases, little or no evidence directly links congressional work to a purchase or a sale. Most lawmakers questioned about potential conflicts of interest say they followed the law or that a relative or broker with no knowledge of their congressional work made a purchase or sale. But that demonstrates the problem. Lawmakers can profit from their inside knowledge while remaining within the bounds of the law, but creating at a minimum the appearance of a conflict of interest. This leads to widespread distrust. The trades exacerbate many voters' senses that politicians put their own interests above the public or the country's. That in turn helps Americans fuel their distrust of their government. Congress in particular consistently scores poorly in surveys about confidence in institutions. Hold on. We should have distrust for our government. Our government is in the violating your rights business pretty much 24/7. The government is never going to call you up and say, have I got a hot stock tip for you? Hey, by the way, you misfiled this one little checkbox on your tax return. We fixed it for you. Don't worry, we saved you $6,500. They don't do that. Each of the past three presidents promised to restore trust in his own way. Barack Obama campaigned on his anti-corruption record and later signed a law trying to stop congressional insider trading. Donald Trump vowed to drain the swamp of corruption and self-dealing. President Biden has called on Congress to prove that democracy still works and that government can deliver for the people. Well, if you mean by the people, you mean Hunter and 10% for the big guy. He's delivering quite well, thank you very much. The institutional distrust, this is out of the New York Times, can pose a threat to democracy, scholars warn. If Americans don't believe the government is working for them, they're not working for us. They're not working. I mean, in name, they're working for us, but they're clearly working for themselves to make money in these stock trades. On Wednesday, Speaker Nancy Pelosi promised a House vote on a congressional stock trading bill this month, but neither that bill or any other appears to have the bipartisan support needed to pass in the Senate. Why? For one, congressional stock trading can be a genuinely tricky issue. Some proposals would effectively force spouses to abandon years-long careers that preceded a lawmaker's time in Congress. That would be the case, for example, with Nancy Pelosi and Senator Tina Smith, whose husbands are both professional investors. Decide how you want to serve. Cut the old man loose from his business or you don't serve. I'm not here to keep Nancy Pelosi or Tina Smith in a job. Sorry, not going to happen. You see, they think we're clowns. They think that we don't understand the sophistication of insider information. If you're a lawyer in a law firm and you trade on stock information and you get caught, your back end is grass and the lawnmower's coming. But Nancy and Pablo Pelosi, those two, who cares? DeFi, Richard Blumenthal, who cares? These guys have got the hookup. And make no mistake, they're laughing at you. They sit there, sipping their scotch, laughing about the little people suffering at 326 gas. When you vote, commit to hold them to account for the next 2 years or 6 years. 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Pam Warner's got the traffic report. Hello. It is the Brett Wetterbull Show. 704-570-1110. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. You'll note in my calm demeanor, I'm attempting to restrain a level of outrage that I'm actually quite honestly surprised I'm able to restrain at this point in my life. I just came across a story put out by a government agency as an alert, and the underlying story has got me so baffled that I may be speechless with this story. It involves the FDA. It involves the FDA. Do you have TikTok on your phone? Do you have TikTok on your phone, Tommy? Okay. Do you, TJ? Kind of, sort of, no? Okay. Okay. I think TikTok should actually official. I'm in the free speech business, but I think TikTok should just be banned. Banned permanently because of this. The story that I'm about to tell you, that began on TikTok. Okay? I'm just going to read the headline. Okay, here's the headline. NyQuil chicken should not be a thing and definitely don't eat it, the FDA says. NyQuil chicken. NyQuil chicken is a thing. NyQuil chicken is the latest TikTok food trend to go viral, as in chicken cooked in the congestion medicine. That sounds so, calling it congestion medicine is awesome. That's exactly how you should refer to it as. Oh, you're eating chicken cooked in congestion medicine. Has he got a video of this? Oh my gosh, what are you doing? Tommy, oh gosh, no. Ladies and gentlemen, this is real. I'm not making this up. Tommy is looking at it on his laptop. They're cooking it in the green stuff.
See, you have to...
the nighttime NyQuil.
You have to cook some chicken in some Red Bull.
Stop it.
To balance it out.
Stop it. No. NyQuil chicken is the latest TikTok food trend to go viral. The FDA is warning against it, not surprisingly. In theory, it's possible to cook chicken in any liquid, including that liquid, but the FDA is warning that the process is dangerous and eating the outcome is even worse. This is so gross. Boiling a medication can make it more concentrated and change its properties in other ways. Even if you don't eat the chicken, inhaling the vapors while cooking it can cause high levels of drugs to enter your body. It could also hurt your lungs. Put simply, someone could take a dangerously high amount of cough and cold medicine without even realizing it. Videos featuring this have been floating around, and they're worried that people are going, why? What the heck? Is that, what the heck?
The images are disturbing.
I believe, ladies and gentlemen, maybe you disagree with me, it's time to declare war on TikTok. Physical, actual war on TikTok. It is time to take TikTok and to knock it offline on a permanent basis. I believe we ought to hit them with a combination atomic weapon NyQuil bomb. That's what I believe. I think we should bomb TikTok. I want to go to war with TikTok. Whoever put this idea together, this is clearly being done to try to hurt people in the United States of America. I believe this is an act of war. I believe this is an act of war. What would we call it? Chicken a la Hunter? I mean, what would we? I don't even know what we would call it. It's so disgusting. I'm looking at the video over his shoulder, and I can't. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the worst thing I've seen in a. I need a voice of sanity, a voice of reason in an otherwise storm of drama. Stan, what is going on? Welcome to the show. What the heck has happened to our once great country, Stan?
Oh, I think that the wrong people are running it now.
100% they are.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to talk to you about something. You were talking about, like, insider information and the training
yes.
and all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes.
Yes.
And in the research for the book that I'm doing, I realized one day, basically, assets are two categories. Either assets, which are like real estate and precious metals, or they're all paper assets. And all paper assets have one thing in common. They are all based on promises of certain people or groups of individuals to perform something in the future. Their current value is based on the likelihood that those people can keep those promises out into the future. So if you think about it, stocks, bonds, currency, the currency itself is based on the propensity for the people to actually pay the debt. Social Security is based on the same thing. So everything that people place faith in is based on the promises, the likelihood that those promises can be made into the future. The bottom line is when problems occur in that chain, we're the last ones to know. And all the other people who know behind the scenes, they keep us from knowing, control the media, and then they set themselves up, and then we end up taking the fall. And that's the Great Depression. The value of the stock market was mm-hmm. the same the day of, the day before, the day of, and the day after. What changed was our expectations, and that's what caused us to all get
burned.
Good point.
It's a good point. It's a really good point, Stan. You're right. We're getting closer, perilously closer. To a world where it's like the metaverse, right? There's nothing attached to the reality. It's just it's a code on a computer chip that just says that you have this much of a stock or any.
But it's just based on our faith, not anything of actual value at all.
Well said, my friend. I appreciate you being out there, Stan. Thank you so very much for that. I mean, this is just crazy. This is nuts. You know, it's incredible. It's incredible, really, to think about this. These people want to eat NyQuil chicken. Okay, I don't understand. What the heck are you doing with perfectly delicious chicken and making NyQuil chicken out of it?
Sleepy chicken.
It's insane, Sleepy. Get away from me with this. It's decongestant medicine on chicken. You know what I want? I'll tell you what I want. I want something classy. I want something better. Chicken cacciatore is what I want.
In Italy, time seems to slow down. You can savor every moment and every flavor. And that's what keeps me coming back. Last year, I dropped everything and spent 6 weeks in Rome. Fell in love with the lifestyle, the culture, and the food.
I'm never leaving.
Everywhere I went, I found people who shared my passion.
Okay, nobody's making NyQuil chicken in Italy. Okay, they're making delicious food. This is why we got to get out of here. We're going to get out of here. June 2023, we're going to go on this trip. You're going to come with me, cruise and tour, 800-383-3131. And of course, you can go to the website as well, cruise-tour.com. Come on, you know I'm right. I don't want NyQuil chicken. I don't want you eating NyQuil chicken. I want to eat delicious, amazing food. I want to laugh and live and learn. Help me. Ban TikTok. No TikTok. TikTok backwards. Hot kit. Brett Whittable Show. News Talk 1110. News Talk 1110.993 WBT. It is the Brett Whittable Show. Today is a big day. It is National Voter Registration Day as we are 7 weeks out from the November elections. 7 weeks. It'll be here before you know it. And I can think of nobody better to visit with than our good friend J. Christian Adams to have him come on and give us his thoughts on obviously the importance of registering to vote, but also the need for secretaries of state to clean those voter rolls. Christian Adams joins us now. Thanks so much for making time for us today.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk a little bit about this. Obviously, very important. You want to get folks registered. They want to get out there and vote. But how do we ensure election integrity and honesty and all that sort of stuff as a part of this component?
Right. If you're listening to the show and you're not registered, today's a great reminder that you need to get registered and participate. The country needs you. But I will tell you, a lot of places around the country, like Michigan, for example, they've done a terrible job of cleaning voter rolls, taking the debt off. We have a lawsuit in Michigan where they have 25,000 active dead registrants, some of whom have been dead for 20 years.
Wow.
And so this is a problem around the country, and people can do something about it by keeping your registration up to date and getting registered if you're not registered.
So is there any legal remedy for you know, for holding these states to account for, you know, cleaning up those voter rolls? How does one go about participating in that effort?
Well, we're suing, Public Interest Legal Foundation is suing Michigan under the National Voter Registration Act, otherwise known as Motor Voter of 1993. And there's a provision in there that allows some parties to sue to get voter rolls cleaned up. But they have to be, there has to be a real serious problem. It's not just because there's one or two people that shouldn't be on the rolls. So that's what we're doing in Michigan. We've sued Pennsylvania. We sued places in Texas, Florida, and so this is one of the things we do to try to make the elections run better.
All right. Finally, in this regard, we've just had about 4 million people transit into the United States from outside the country. Are you confident that we're going to be able to enforce voter ID laws, those sorts of things, with an eye towards 7 weeks from now?
Well, yeah, good question, because there's really nothing preventing them from registering except the fear that they might get arrested for doing so. There's no citizenship checks. You don't have that in this country when you register to vote. You have to swear under oath that you're a citizen, but that's all there is. There's no secondary steps behind that to check to see if they're really citizens.
Wow. A lot to keep in mind. J. Christian Adams, where do people go to get more information on your organization?
PublicInterestLegal.org. PublicInterestLegal.org.
Appreciate you making time for us today, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You got it. That's Christian Adams with his take on the importance of protecting the franchise of voting. It's a very important story to pay close attention to. All right, I want to take this call from Ralph. Ralph is calling back to our last hour. Ralph, you have thoughts on this NyQuil chicken crazy story that's out there.
Hey, Brett.
Hey.
I've got a great idea for Thanksgiving. I know it's hot right now, but fall's coming. But I've got a new recipe. You're going to take your chicken and wash it real good, clean out the cavity, and you take Vicks Vapor Rub and rub it down really good and put you some eucalyptus in there. And I was just wondering, is that going to be safe?
No, we don't want that. That's not meant to be in a cooked product. No, you can't. That's not safe. The FDA is going to light us up now for that. Vicks Vapor Rub. Ugh.
That would sting.
Just cook your stuff with regular stuff. Olive oil, seasonings, spices. You don't need decongestant or any of that to be utilized in advancing the flavor of your product. You don't need it. I'm telling you, that's not the way to go. We are a great nation with many great cooks. We are people who, some have said, we invented the term cuisine. I do believe that's probably not one of our inventions. But, you know, we have cuisine. You know, we have cuisine. We have fast food. I think we've pretty much invented the fast. We got a corner on the fast food market. Lord knows, anytime you export fast food, it's a popular thing. And none of it has decongestant in it. I mean, that's just, look, you're not supposed to combine those things. Food products and drugs are two totally different things. And there's no reason at all. If you've got decongestant issues, then what you need to do is get a big bowl of hot, steaming, actual chicken soup. Not with any additional items. You don't need creme de menthe. You don't need Cisco. You don't need any of that. None of that is needed. You cook it in you cook it in broth, or you make the broth by adding water and simmering until you have a broth forming there. Okay, but we're not doing these added on accoutrements. We're better than that. Okay? We are better than that. That is some Riverside County, California stuff right there, and you don't need that. That is not for you. I'm just telling you right now. It is We are monitoring a number of stories. We got the gas leak. We've also got, as we speak, there's a briefing with the Cabarrus County Schools Superintendent giving an update following some threats on the schools. There, very active news cycle unfolding right in front of our eyes. And it's important to understand that when we look at the challenges that we're facing, we got to be aware of everything. I'm telling you, get rid of the TikTok. The TikTok is not your friend. It's going to lead you to ruin. It will lead you to ruin. You don't need the TikTok. The TikTok is a China plant. And I don't mean plant like something fun. I mean, it's a plant inside of our culture designed to make us do dumb things and then put them on video so that Xi Jinping can laugh at you. 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Pam Warner. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Can you imagine Gordon Ramsay walking in on somebody trying to cook it that way? Can you? I mean, can you imagine how the stuff that would come out of Gordon Ramsay's mouth would be absolutely incredible? It would be worth its weight in gold. The border crisis worsened in August. I know you probably didn't know that, but newly released Customs and Border Protection data says 203,597 immigrants were apprehended attempting to cross the U.S.-Mexico border. That's a 329% increase from the average number of August apprehensions during the Trump administration. 11,365 children apprehended, 104,000 illegal immigrants apprehended from countries outside the Northern Triangle and Mexico, 66 people on the terror watch list. Repeating, 66 terrorists were busted on the terror watch list, apprehended trying to enter the United States. More than 4.4 million illegal immigrants have crossed the border since Joe Biden immaculated himself into the White House. This includes nearly 3.6 million illegal immigrants that Customs and Border Protection has apprehended and the over 850,000 gotaways that have escaped past the Border Patrol into the United States. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. It's really an incredible thing to look at. And one of the issues that we've got happening is human trafficking as a part of this as well. And I want to welcome John to the program. John, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Thanks for making time for us today. Let's talk a little bit about the challenges that you're looking at and that we're facing in this country.
So I recently had a book published about human trafficking called It's Not About the Sex. And, it's an issue all over the country, and it's something that is under the radar in most of this country. You know, we hear a lot about it on the border,
right,
as part of the human smuggling. But it's also in the small towns, rural, and in the suburban neighborhoods, kind of all over. So it's something that doesn't get a lot of press, but is really kind of hiding in plain sight.
When you look at the challenge of human trafficking and not necessarily at the border, but inside the United States itself, where are the folks who are being trafficked? Where are they most vulnerable at being brought into that life? These young folks and maybe even a little bit older folks. Where are they at their most vulnerable?
Yeah, there's really three areas that we're seeing that come from. And, you know, as you mentioned, most are underage. About 57% of those that are being trafficked for sexual purposes are underage. And the most vulnerable is probably the most obvious. Somebody who is, you know, a homeless teen or a runaway teen, that's definitely going to be a big risk factor. They're going to get approached typically within the first 24 to 48 hours. The second piece is somebody who is kind of fallen through the cracks in the foster system. You know, there's a lot of great foster parents and adoptive parents, but there's just too many that are really in it for the wrong reasons. And the third piece, which is really what kind of surprises people, is you get those that are still living at home, still going to high school. Mm-hmm. And the reason why that happens is 60% of all of the underage teens that are being exploited, it started with someone that they knew. So that could be a family member, neighbor, friend, or someone that they met online.
Speaking with John DiGirolamo, is that how I pronounce your last name?
That's DiGirolamo.
DiGirolamo. And he's got a book out right now. It's a phenomenal book. It's called It's Not About the Sex, True Stories of Human Trafficking from a Law Enforcement Officer, a Survivor, a Brothel Madam, and an Advocate. Here's the question I have for you, though. Why is it that we seem to have a blind spot in our country dealing with this issue? This is modern day slavery, and you know, if we knew that there were people bringing slaves across the border into the United States, and it was a verifiable effort from a country, we would sanction that country. We would maybe invade that country. We would engage in a series of actions against that country. Why is it that we don't take this as seriously as we should at the state level, the federal level, and beyond?
Yeah, I think a lot of people have their kind of heads in the sand, so to speak. You know, I've talked to people throughout the process of writing this book, publishing and marketing, and a lot of people just don't think it happens that much. And, you know, some of the numbers out there is that with sex trafficking, more money is made with that in this country than the NFL, NBA, and Major League Baseball combined.
Wow.
So it's a huge, huge number. It's just second crime after drugs. And what's different is, you know, with drugs, you're either manufacturing it in a lab or you're growing it. But with trafficking, you're using somebody's body over and over. And it's so highly traumatic because we're not just talking about one traumatic experience. We're talking about daily, multiple times per day traumatic experience. And just the psychological impact that it has on people. A lot of people don't like to talk about it. It's not a fun, you know, easy subject to talk about. But it is, but it really is just something that's happening under our noses.
You say that, look, it's well within our capacity to inform others about human trafficking, call authorities when we observe something that looks suspicious, or volunteer in our communities. You write that in the introduction of the book. So this is really, this is a whole of purpose effort that has to be undertaken, where we have got to all commit to taking on this scourge and ensuring it stops. What's the title of the book again, and where can folks get it?
It's called It's Not About the Sex, and they can get a signed copy from my website, which is www.itisnotabout.com, or you can go to Amazon and get a print, Kindle, or audio copy.
We appreciate you making time for us. It's a very important issue, and we'll continue to speak with you about this moving forward. I appreciate you being there, John.
Really glad you had me on. Thanks so much.
Me as well. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Let's head on over to Jeff Atkison with the update. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. All right, I want to take this call because this is calling back to something we talked about a little while ago. This is Willie. Willie joining us. How are you, Willie?
Yes, this is Jim in San Diego.
Wow. Did you, hold on a minute, did you masquerade as a guy named Willie?
No, I don't know how that happened.
That's weird. Somehow, I guess our screener may have gotten into the supply of chicken.
Wow. Yeah, you got into the NyQuil. You got to watch that guy.
Okay, so let's talk to Jim in San Diego. Hello, Jim. Welcome to the program, Jim.
Yes, name of my new band, NyQuil Chicken and the Decongestants.
That was well done. I can't blow you up for that one. That was very well done, Jim. You know what that was? That was succinct and right to the point. Criminals, including murderers, got COVID checks from the IRS. You may have heard about that, or you may not have. More than 1.1 million incarcerated individuals received COVID-19 stimulus checks totaling over $1 billion, according to internal data provided by the IRS. Now, I know you know, and I know, that the government was just throwing cash out as quickly as they can. But the idea that 1.1 million incarcerated individuals got COVID-19 stimulus checks totaling over $1 billion has got me a little concerned. Here's why. 163,000 of those recipients are individuals serving life sentences without the possibility of parole. The IRS told Representative Don Bacon of Nebraska in a letter exclusively obtained by the Washington Free Beacon. IRS Commissioner Charles Rettig said that his agency does not possess data on how many of those individuals with life sentences may also be facing the death penalty. So we may have given COVID money to death row inmates who were waiting to see what was going to end up happening. Now, I know what you're saying. It's just, who cares? $500. That doesn't really matter. The American Rescue Plan was reckless given the amount of massive spending with no offsets, Congressman Bacon told the Free Beacon. Giving stimulus checks to death row inmates is a glaring example. The bill triggered the worst inflation in 41 years, costing average families $500 a month, and the poor are suffering the most. The total cost of these payments going to people incarcerated was at least $1.3 billion. Now, it gets even worse. We're talking NyQuil chicken bad here, okay? For real, when you hear this. Republican lawmakers, such as Congressman Bacon and Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas, warned in 2021 that President Biden's $2 trillion package to stimulate the package lacked appropriate guardrails. After reports came out showing terrorists, including the Boston Marathon bomber Dzhokhar Tsarnaev, got a $1,400 stimulus check. I bet he was good and stimulated to go out and commit more jihad. That's according to Glenn Kessler, who writes for the Washington Compost. The IRS disclosure of criminals receiving stimulus checks highlights how the federal government's unprecedented spending spree passed with little oversight. The SBA, Small Business Administration, admitted in May it has no plan to stop fraudulent loan applications for a $1 trillion paycheck protection program. So that's your money. That's your money. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Yeah, so just listening to this, it gets me infuriated. I'm just wondering if those thousands and thousands of new agents that are coming on board for the IRS, I would hope they police themselves in some way, because that's just outrageous.
No, they're not going. They're going to police you. They're going to come.
Yeah. It was sort of sarcastic. I didn't think they would, but you would think that just common sense, if you're just not watching where the money goes before you send the money out. Big red flag there, but
insane.
I just don't see it changing.
Insane. Great stuff. Appreciate you being out there, Kevin. He's 100% right. By the way, the Sportsman Banquet is going to be featuring Tom Cotton and Representative Chip Roy on October 1st of this year over at the farm at 95. So you can get information if you Google that. You'll be able to see where you could probably talk to Tom Cotton yourself, and you can say, what kind of cotton-picking nonsense is this with this IRS money floating about? Sending money to criminals. What the heck? Let's head on over to Pam Warner with a look at the traffic. Vegans, the vegan lifestyle, vegetarians, what do they all have in common? You're not supposed to eat the meat. You can't eat the meat, which means that they are all exempted, by the way, from NyQuil chicken. So we're not going to talk about NyQuil chicken anymore. This is the last reference to NyQuil chicken we're going to mention until I harass poor Bo Thompson with NyQuil chicken coming up here in about 30 minutes. Okay, tell me what's wrong with this story. Beyond Meat, That's a vegan food, right? A vegetarian vegan kind of a thing. Okay. So it's like where they take all the stuff, they mix it, they compress it, then they push it down and they put it on a bun and they tell you you're eating meat, right? Okay. The COO of Beyond Meat has gone beyond meat. He's gone to a totally different kind of meat. Get ready. Flag this, Dave, TJ, because we may be called in for a meeting. When I tell you about the meat he's been snacking on. This is pretty serious. This ain't no Slim Jim. All right, this is an issue. The Beyond Meat chief operating officer is a guy by the name of Doug Ramsey. He was arrested this weekend in Arkansas in a parking garage after a college football game. Does Arkansas have college football teams? Sometimes. That was TJ. Please direct all comments to TJ if you're a Razorback. Beyond Meat chief operating officer Doug Ramsey was arrested this weekend after allegedly biting a man's nose in an Arkansas parking garage following a college football game.
Whoa, that's not vegan.
Ramsey's 53 and was charged with terroristic threatening and third-degree battery and booked into the Washington County, Arkansas jail on Saturday night, released Sunday, according to the Washington County information page. Ramsey and Beyond Meat did not immediately respond to requests and comments. The altercation happened in the parking garage near the Donald W. Reynolds Razorback Stadium in Fayetteville after a University of Arkansas football game, according to a preliminary police report. Local television station KNWA, Fox 24, KNWA? Wait, this is too perfect. Hold on a minute. Wait a minute. The dude works for Beyond Meat. He bit a guy's nose in violation of, obviously, the Beyond Meat ethos, where you're not supposed to eat meat. Beyond Meat is a vegan product. The TV station is quinoa. It's KNWA. That is weird. What are the odds that the COO of a vegetarian vegan concoction company, Beyond Meat, goes and starts snacking on somebody's nose and the TV station covering the Beyond Meat CEO eating a nose is quinoa? What are the odds? I mean, why wouldn't you be KLSA, coleslaw? I mean, what are the odds? Hello. We're calling from Quinoa TV about the Beyond Meat COO who took a liking to the cartilage of the nose. Ramsey allegedly punched through the back windshield of a Subaru after it made contact with the front tire of Ramsey's car. How ragey do you have to be? This dude's been sneaking meat. He's sneaking meat under the table. He's like, they're handing him Salisbury steaks. He's eating bootleg Salisbury steaks. And no, I'm not saying he needs NyQuil chicken. Stop that. That is not true at all. So he punched through the back windshield of a Subaru after it made contact with the front tire of Ramsey's car. The Subaru owner got out of his car. Ramsey started punching him and bit his nose, ripping the flesh on the tip of his nose. The victim and a witness also alleged that Ramsey told the Subaru owner he would kill him. Campus police declined to comment to reporting outlets here. Ramsey has been the operating chief of Beyond Meat since December. The food company has been facing skepticism from investors over disappointing sales, operating challenges, and its long-term growth prospects. The stock's actually down 73% this year. Before joining the maker of meat alternatives, Ramsey spent three decades at Tyson Foods, overseeing its poultry and McDonald's business. So you can be in the poultry and McDonald's business. Hold on. How mad would you have to be to punch through the rear window of a car? Like, that's Hulk smash at that point. How does that happen? You know, he sounds like a human volcano. The super volcano threat level has been raised 1,800 years after the world's biggest eruption. A super volcano responsible for the largest eruption over the past 5,000 years has been cranked up a level on the alert stakes. Taupo is in New Zealand has not covered the nation's north island in lava, rock, and ash for 1,800 years, but scientists are noticing a shift in the activities. The alert level for the formidable supervolcano has been raised from 0 to 1 out of 6 for the first time since the measuring system was introduced in 1994. This is one of those stories where they're trying to scare you, and here's why. Because they don't know if they've ever raised the level from 0 to 3 or 4 since they just started measuring it in 94. The thing could have gone up to 7 at some point 4,700 years ago. We don't know. This is another one of these deals where we're going to hear that climate change is doing this, and we have got to give Greta Thunberg a Beyond Meat patty and have her do an interview with Quinoa. And she's going to sit there and say, how dare you? How dare you? I wanted to be on switchgrass, not quinoa. This quinoa is no good. I want ancient grains. Like ancient grains of sand through the hourglass, so are the days of our ragey COO's lives. Crazy stuff going on out there. Everybody's got to relax. Relax. We got another great hour straight ahead. Bo Thompson comes by. Mark Garrison is going to check in with us. We're going to take phone calls. We're going to unpack all the big stuff you need to know before you walk through that front door of your home. 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. On Twitter at Winterbull Show and at the Brett Winterbull Show Facebook page. I'm Brett Winterbull. News Talk 1110 and 993 WBT. The most comprehensive radio program all day. 704-570-1110. My name is Brett Winterbull. Great to be here with you. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. There's so much that we've covered. I mean, where have you been? You need to go back and listen to the first hour and then follow it with the second hour. And now we're in the third hour. And it's really incredible. I would be remiss if I didn't salute some of the members of the media and the political elite. With their commentary, letting you hear some of their commentary. Much has been made about the passing of the Queen and the changes that the monarchy is now going to face. And the issue of reparations has come up. The issue of reparations has come up. There are people who are saying King Charles and the royal family need to sell all their stuff and divest and do all that sort of thing and, you know, shut down the actual monarchy over there in England. I don't think that's going to happen. Do you know there have been, this is incredible, 37 generations of monarchs in England. 37 generations. 66 kings in England. 66, tracing their lineage all the way back to Alfred the Great in 852. All right. So that's how far back this goes. And so as a result, people are saying, all right, the royal family needs to get with the times and needs to pay reparations. Don Lemon was speaking with a scholar of the monarchy last night. And he asked, what about getting reparations for the colonial activities of the royal family there in England? Here's how that conversation went.
Cost of living, a living crisis, austerity budget cuts, and so on. And then you have those who are asking for reparations for colonialism, and they're wondering, you know, $100 billion, $24 billion here and there, $500 million there. Some people want to be paid back, and members of the public are wondering, why are we suffering when you are, you know, you have all of this vast wealth? Those are legitimate concerns.
Well, I think you're right about reparations in terms of if people want it, though, what they need to do is you always need to go back to the beginning of a supply chain. Where was the beginning of the supply chain? That was in Africa. And when that crossed the entire world, when slavery was taking place, which was the first nation in the world that abolished slavery? The first nation in the world to abolish it. It was started by William Wilberforce, was the British. In Great Britain, they abolished slavery. 2,000 naval men died on the high seas trying to stop slavery. Why? Because the African kings were rounding up their own people. They had them on cages waiting in the beaches. No one was running into Africa to get them. And I think you're totally right. If reparations need to be paid, we need to go right back to the beginning of that supply chain and say, who was rounding up their own people and having them handcuffed in cages? Absolutely. That's where they should start. And maybe, I don't know, the descendants of those families where they died at in the high seas trying to stop the slavery, that those families should receive something too, I think, at the same time.
It's an interesting discussion, Hillary. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So that was the back and forth on that issue. He then went to a commercial break. Ron DeSantis is upset with the deportation of the migrants that were sent up to Martha's Vineyard. This is cut number two. Ron DeSantis explaining the rationale for what it was that was happening there in Martha's Vineyard.
Because you know, you've been covering this. Millions of people since Biden's been president illegally coming across the southern border. Did they freak out about that? No. You've had migrants die in the Rio Grande. You had 50 die in Texas in a trailer because they were being neglected. Was there a freak out about that? No, there wasn't. You've had criminal aliens get across that southern border and victimize Americans, killing some, raping some. Was there any type of outrage about that? No. And then, of course, we know fentanyl deaths are at an all-time high. Where's that fentanyl coming from? It's coming over the open southern border. It's only when 50 get put into Martha's Vineyard, which wasn't saying they didn't want this. They said they wanted this. They said they were a sanctuary jurisdiction. These were people who were basically destitute and then put in a situation where they could have succeeded, but that was all virtue signaling. And not only did they not welcome them, they deported them the next day with the National Guard. Give me a break.
It's a big issue. I mean, it's a big issue. And now we know there is an inbound flight heading to Delaware as we speak. Because Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott chartered a flight out of Austin, Texas, to send migrants now to Delaware. And that was announced earlier today. After Florida Governor Ron DeSantis arranged flights for 48 mostly Venezuelan migrants from Texas to Massachusetts, last week immigration attorneys and elected officials are demanding criminal investigations, and one Texas sheriff is probing allegations that the group was lured onto planes with false information. Delaware agencies now are preparing for another potential flight due to arrive in a matter of hours or minutes near President Joe Biden's beach home in Rehoboth Beach. State agencies and community groups are preparing humanitarian aid. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said at an event on Tuesday he cannot confirm another flight of migrants is leaving Texas for Delaware, though he criticized President Biden, who he said created a crisis at the border. Lawyers for one group of migrants who were moved to a larger shelter operation in Cape Cod on Friday argue they were deceived with false promises of financial aid and housing and were instead dropped off at unannounced Martha's Vineyard last week. Hey, look, we all have to do our part here. Nobody wants to go to Martha's Vineyard. I don't know anybody that wants to go to Martha's Vineyard. I don't know anybody that wants to go to the Cape of God. I mean, what are you doing? I mean, unfortunately, I have a sneaking suspicion that Joe Biden is going to intervene in this regard, and he's going to call out the resources in the state of Delaware, you know, because he's the president, so he's going to have to call the governor of Delaware, and he's going to have to say, listen, we need the National Guard to come out and take these migrants and put them where they now belong. Cape Cod. I think Joe Biden is going to take Cape Cod and make it his new landing spot for these folks. You see how committed he is to an open border? Do you see how committed they are to the open border? It's remarkable. I'm going to be in D.C. tomorrow and Thursday covering this crisis. I got Tom Homan coming on with me. Mark Morgan's coming on with me. A number of great people. We're going to talk about this and unpack this and help folks understand the dangers here. And if you have a question you'd like me to submit to them, please feel free to pass that along at 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WVT. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterble Show alongside my good friend Bo Thompson. AM and PM, PM and AM, we know we cross the streams every day, 8:35 in the morning. And then, of course, at 5:20 in the afternoon. Bo Thompson, good to have you back, my friend.
Always good to be here.
All right. I'm at the point where I'm calling for the outright ban of TikTok. I want TikTok banned from the United States. I've finally have hit my limit on TikTok. Do you care to hear why?
Yes.
This is an FDA warning that has come out from the Food and Drug Administration. Don't cook chicken in NyQuil. FDA warns about dangerous social media challenge. They're cooking chicken in NyQuil and then eating it. And the FDA is saying, this can hurt you. This can make you very sick. This is really bad. Quote, boiling a medication can make it much more concentrated and change its properties in other ways. Even if you don't eat the chicken, inhaling the medication's vapors while cooking could cause high levels of the drugs to enter your body and could hurt your lungs. Are you kidding me?
You know, I saw this. I glanced at the headline this afternoon at some point in my, you know, prepping for my show tomorrow, and I saw this, and I'm just thinking to myself, you know, people have too much time on their hands.
Oh my God!
Now that TikTok and social media outlets exist, now it's for others to see. You know, at least before social media, you could be stupid by yourself.
Yes. Yes.
But you, and I don't know. I don't even know what to say anymore, to be honest.
See, I don't either. This is what I was saying this to TJ and to Tommy, and I was saying, I don't have TikTok on my phone. I had it. I flirted with it for about 2 weeks, and I was looking at some stuff. And then I said, you know what? This, you literally feel like your brain is rotting. And so I'm going to tie this back to the story, one of the big stories you were talking about this morning with Beth, and that is what's going on at Carowinds. Because now you can't have kids just go to the amusement park and have a good time. Now it has to be stupid time. And I believe that this is all being prompted by, I'm going to be social media famous. We're going to disrupt. We're going to destroy. We're going to create panic. This has got to stop. This has finally, I don't know if you need to post like some kind of a bond to get into Carowinds that you get refunded when you get out, assuming you don't do anything wrong. I mean, this is really nutso, and I ascribe all of this to social media.
I do too. Well, I ascribe it to social media. Social media is like pouring gasoline on the fire. We had
sure
one
is.
Caller this morning, and we were talking about this, who said, you know, it really comes down to if you're a parent and you allow your kids, and now that there's a chaperone rule in place, this
right.
is obviously this has changed a bit, but for the purposes of what I'm saying here, okay, before that, back when you could send you know, kids of a certain age to Carowinds unsupervised,
yes.
it comes down to what kind of conversation, what kind of relationship do you have with your kids before you let them do that?
That's right.
I grew up in this area.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first time I went to Carowinds without my parents.
Yep.
It was a big deal.
Sure.
But it was a big deal because my parents had ingrained in me that it was a big deal to be getting that privilege.
Right.
And I think, I mean, to me it comes down to, and Carowinds is not unique to this. There are plenty of other situations.
Sure.
I mean, look at all the trouble with malls.
Right.
Look at all the
football
places
games.
Where kids, in football games. I mean, anywhere, I think all of us can remember that first time that mm-hmm. Mom or dad let you go somewhere that you knew you were not completely on your own, but you were unsupervised.
That's right.
And it's really basic to me, but I completely agree with you that the social media part of it has just amped it up so much, because when we were coming up, mm-hmm. you know, like I said, back to the original point, if you do something stupid, it's just by yourself. Now there can be an audience, and that's sort of the that's sort of like the addiction that some of these kids have with wanting to broadcast to the world.
That's right. We didn't want to be known for what we were doing. That was the point. Right. It was very subtle. All right, let's talk about something really positive and something really good. I know you're excited about it. I'm excited about it. How about the ACC headquarters to Charlotte?
This is huge, and it's a no-brainer at the same time. I am one of the old schoolers that loves to see the ACC tournament in Greensboro. I am a Charlottean who loves having the tournament in Charlotte, but I would be a proponent of having Greensboro still be in the rotation, because Greensboro and Charlotte are the two cities in, you know, the Tobacco Road. Mm-hmm. I say Tobacco Road. I mean, when people talk about you know, old school ACC,
sure.
You're not thinking about Miami, and you're not thinking about Boston College,
right.
or Virginia Tech. You're thinking about North Carolina, NC State, mm-hmm. Duke, Wake Forest, to a degree Clemson. Mm-hmm. But you're thinking of the ones that are close in to North Carolina and Georgia Tech. I got to put Georgia Tech and Virginia in there too. But to me, the ACC has always been best when it's been centralized around Tobacco Road, and the two cities that don't have schools in them that are in close proximity to that are Charlotte and Greensboro. So I think everybody sort of saw the writing on the wall with the ACC leaving Greensboro. But, you know, if you listen to some of the local leaders like Tark Bakari, mm-hmm. it wasn't between Charlotte and Greensboro. It was between Charlotte or the ACC going somewhere well out of North Carolina and South Carolina, like Florida. And to me, I've never been on board. I know why they did it, and I'm sure it may even expand further because you see what college football is doing with all this consolidation. But to me, the ACC, when you have Boston College playing Miami and you have the ACC championship game in Jacksonville, that just doesn't make sense. This is great for Charlotte. It makes sense for the ACC, you know, the core of the ACC, and it means that this trend that we've been seeing with, you know, the ACC basketball tournament and the ACC baseball tournament and the ACC title football game at Bank of America Stadium, it means all of that is going to continue, and they're going to build on that. And I love that for this area.
That is so great. Well, see, that's a great way to wrap the segment. What do you have coming up on the big program tomorrow, my friend?
Well, the President's Cup, of course. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow is a big day of dignitaries and stars before the actual competition starts on Thursday. And also, this big ACC news, it's fitting that you and I are talking about this. Eric Spanberg, senior writer for the Charlotte Business Journal, who was one of the first to report this story this morning, is going to join Beth and me at 7:20 tomorrow to break down two big, big sports/business stories for this city. So we're very excited.
Looking forward to it, my friend. Appreciate you being there. And let's agree to keep the kids accountable, all right?
Exactly.
All right, buddy. Have a great night, Bo. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. This is really sad news I'm about to share with the audience. Mark Zuckerberg has lost $71 billion in wealth. $71 billion. Even in a rough year for just about every U.S. tech titan and worker in America, the wealth erased from the chief executive officer of Meta Platforms Incorporated stands out. His fortune has been cut in half and then some, dropping by $71 billion so far this year. The most among the ultra-rich, tracked by the Bloomberg Billionaires Index. At $55.9 billion, his net worth ranks 20th. Among global billionaires, his lowest spot since 2014. He's behind three Waltons and two members of the Koch family. Moment of silence for his loss of wealth. Let's talk to Edward here. Edward, welcome to the program. How are you?
Doing great. How's it going?
Doing great. Thank you for calling. I appreciate you being there.
Yeah, I just had a comment about the whole TikTok thing.
Yes.
I was reading on the interwebs, you know, like deep in the internet.
Yes.
About how other countries, the algorithm for TikTok is completely different, where, like in China specifically, like they're rewarded with academia, they were rewarded with like all these things in social obedience and like rewards and science fairs, and that's what's trending for them. And then look what's trending for us.
Yes.
Like how the algorithm works in the U.S. And it's just operative conditioning, you know, it's like Pavlov, you know what I mean?
Yes.
This ringing of the bell. It's pretty interesting.
It's like exporting dangerous, deadly chemicals like fentanyl to the United States and banning it inside your country.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, same idea, but just mentally.
Wow, so we're getting mental rot along with physical rot. This is a great observation, Edward. You know, Edward's the call of the day, by the way. Just so you know, man, you're the call of the day.
Hello?
Hello.
Yo, guys, how you doing?
Congratulations. You're the caller of the day. Brought to you by High Performance Real Estate Advisors.
Yeah, I mean, that's an awesome call there from Edward, and I think he's exactly right on with all that's going on here. I mean, they are trying to take us down. They're trying to take us down. It's really incredible in so many ways. When you look at the way all this stuff is unfolding. Hey, by the way, this weekend I'm going to be giving a speech at the Salt and Light Conference, Salt and Light Charlotte 2022. And I'll be speaking on Saturday in the afternoon, and I'd love to see you all out there. There's tickets available if you want to head on over there. NCFaithAndFreedom.com, NCFaithAndFreedom.com. Come by, check it out. It's a very, very interesting grouping of folks who are there speaking, and Jason puts on a tremendous program over there. I think it's absolutely worthwhile. NCFaithAndFreedom.com. Let's talk to John next. Hey, John, welcome to the show.
I will be there Saturday. It's always a great event.
Yes, John. I always appreciate you being there, buddy.
It's great. I'm glad you got added to the lineup.
I am too, man.
Hey, I was talking about Zuckerberg losing $71 billion.
Yes, sir.
There's a word for that. It's called karma.
Yes.
This man spent $400 million getting Biden elected, mm-hmm. and now Biden's policy is biting him in the butt, and I'm laughing at him.
Yes. 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 I mean, the next thing you're going to tell me is that you're excited for Cooper Rush.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hey, look, Cooper Rush has not lost a game yet. And Tom Brady has lost games.
That's right.
So who's the GOAT?
That's right. That's right. Cooper Rush has not lost to the Saints. Tom Brady has. That's a good point. All right. I'll see you over there, man. I appreciate you being there, John. That's John Check.
Holiday Show.
I'm thinking maybe I go and cross the border illegally, don't tell them who I am, and then maybe I can get a free trip to Hawaii.
Well, they need a vacation spot other than Martha's Vineyard.
Right, right. What if Martha's Vineyard's too cold, right? Like, what if I don't want to go to Massachusetts because, you know, it's Massachusetts.
Stay connected. Pete Callender. Tomorrow, noon to 3. WBT.
Your emergency situation station.
News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. His name is Mark Garrison, mm-hmm. and he's going to be leading Charlotte at 6, just after 6, giving you the tour of the knowledge you need to make your evening complete. Welcome back, Mark
Indeed.
Garrison.
Thank you, sir. Mm-hmm. Dirty Book Tuesday on the show.
What? Oh, hold on a second.
Yeah.
It's a family show here. I don't know about that.
I'll tell you, Cabarrus County School Board is trying to keep smutty books out of school libraries. They even read part of a steamy book at a recent school board meeting.
What?
We'll let you hear some of that. It's very interesting. Rowdy kids at Carowinds. Now the theme park says they have had it. If you want your kids to go to Scarewinds, they will need adult supervision. We'll talk to parkgoers who are saying, amen, brother, it's about time.
Oof.
Yeah. 6:35, Dirty Restaurant Tuesday, a Wendy's with roaches near the fries.
No, no, hold on a minute. If you're going to have roaches near the fries, they need to be in the fries. In the basket getting cooked down.
Right? Yeah. And TJ, the food critic, will learn to read a Korean menu.
Really? Did you have bulgogi?
Well, he pronounced it correctly.
Right. Yeah. I tried to.
Oh, he tried to.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is going to be, this is listening, mandatory listening, yeah, my friend.
Absolutely.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks, sir.
All right. Mark Garrison, Charlotte at 6. You want to be listening to this, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not kidding you at all. But TJ, were you effectively able to handle the Korean menu? Oh, wait. Don't tell us because we want to hear the story.
I've been practicing really hard.
Have you really? Is it one of the hardest things you've ever had to do?
It's up there for sure.
You know, there was a period of time in my life where I decided I was going to teach myself a language. Okay. This isn't the modern era. So this isn't like I had to go check out the CDs or the cassette right. tapes and try to teach myself, you know, some language. So I started doing it. And the thing is, when it comes to learning another language after a certain age, you just go, I'm exhausted.
Yeah,
is that a vowel? Is that a vowel? Is that a fricative? What is that? I don't know what that is. I mean, it's just
I don't know what those things are in English.
A fricative? When I was in school, I had to take voice and articulation. And that was a challenge for people that had a very distinct accent. So we're all aware of some very distinctive accents. And to take people who were 18, 19, 20, 21, who had been speaking a particular way for a period of time and suddenly have to change the way they're speaking, that's a big deal because it takes immense amounts of practice.
Yeah.
To hear people from Massachusetts, you know, pack the car, like the old cliche, right? S-backing is another one. S-backing is something I've never had. S-backing. It's called an S-backing. Here's what S-backing is, okay? S-backing is when the word is street, but it is said street. When you put an S-H in front of the T, street, that is S-backing. And that is something that there are people that's a style of speech that people use, you know, here, there, and everywhere. But, you know, that's a huge challenge. So, like, it's not just like learning how to change your dialect or what it is. You're supposed to go to, you know, modern standard English. You know, they always said you should try to sound like Johnny Carson.
Oh.
Just like middle of the country, Nebraska. You know, just middle of the country sound.
I sound like the middle of York County.
I like that. See, I like the texture of accents and inflections and voices, and I like euphemisms. I'm somebody who really enjoys that stuff. I think that's what makes America great in terms of where we all come from. But, you know, it's so I tried to teach myself a language. I have never thought about trying to learn Korean. Korean would be very challenging, I think.
Start with the menus.
I think I would start with the menus. I think I would. I just don't want to cook my own meat because, you know, you can do your own cooking there at the restaurant. I feel like if I'm going to do my own cooking, then, like, you should pay me to eat the food.
You get a discount at least.
Right? I mean, I don't go to a Japanese restaurant and they make me make my own sushi.
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't want to do it. I've tried to make my own sushi at my home.
Couldn't get the roll right.
No, the roll is okay. It's just, it's so much better when someone who knows what they're doing is making it.
Well, yeah, like the gas station.
Just like gas station sushi. I mean, that's gas station sushi. Don't look down your nose on that. Okay, That's all I'm saying is all. Be careful when you drive down the street. All right, folks, I want you to come and join me. We're going to go to Italy. It's going to be awesome. June 2023. Cruise-tour.com. Cruise-tour.com. I'm going down to Washington, D.C. I'm going into the swamp. We're going to talk immigration for the next couple of days, but a whole lot of stuff with that as well. We will be back tomorrow starting at 3. Charlotte at 6 is up next. Thanks to TJ and Tommy and Pam and Mark Garrison and Jeff Atkinson. News Talk 1110-993 WBT.
The pigs have won tonight. They can all sleep soundly, and everything is all right.
Who is your daddy, and what does he do?